This is Gary Stevens, and I'm here interviewing Carl Pi-Homan, and it's the 19th of June, 1991, and we're talking about Rotary as well as early days in Kodiak. So, Carl, I'm sorry we had trouble with this tape, but could we talk again about the beginning of Rotary and come back and talk about this, these other matters, but just to refresh your memory, you had said there were several members of Rotary, several fellows who were the founders of Rotary, I guess the charter members,
check.
And they were yourself would be one, and Wadlinger would be another.
Wadlinger.
What was his first name?
Larry.
Larry Wadlinger.
Gene Dawson.
Gene Dawson.
Charlie Madsen.
Charlie Madsen.
Dr. Johnson.
R. Holmes Johnson. You mentioned Ray Martin.
Ray Martin. Roy Snyder.
Roy Snyder, who was at the Mecca, owned the Mecca. Ray Martin, now I knew him much later, in 1970, and he was an agent of Alaska Airlines, I think,
that
time. But when he started it, he had, what was he doing?
A liquor store.
A liquor store, yeah.
Yeah.
And you also said Ray, or Roy Snyder, had...
He built the Mecca bar back in 37, the same time as I was building my store.
And he had cabs.
Yes.
Now that's seven. Anybody else you can think of that was in? You mentioned 10. Was that right? 10 original
Approximately.
Members?
Approximately. I don't remember the exact number, but there were just a handful of us. Anyway, there were just a very few.
Now that was about. That was in 1941.
I think.
I had the. They had started constructing the naval station at that by that time.
Yes, there were 400 families out there building building the base.
Uh-huh.
They intended to fight the Soviets or Russia. They had no idea the Japanese deal was a surprise, Pearl Harbor and all that.
Yeah.
Of course, we had blackouts and it was dark.
That was in 41. Were there members of Rotary who were from the military too, early on? Or?
No. I don't remember any military. They were too busy out there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, we had all these families out there, so they had a commissary and everything, so we didn't see much of them to start with, because they weren't used to dealing with stores.
Yeah.
Here, you know, this and that. They wanted to buy a Safeway style, you know, where they could go and pick and check out. It's a lot better.
Now, you mentioned that, you were born in a fog neck, and your father had a grocery store there?
Yes, he had a general merchandise store.
Uh-huh.
Little of everything. Outing flannel, kerosene, wedding rings, groceries, medical, you know, aspirins.
What was his name?
Charles Pi-Homan.
Could you just sort of give me a little bit of history of the family now? Were there other children? And what was your mother's name?
My mother's name was Matti Salamata.
And she was Russian then?
Her father was a Russian priest, born in Sitka.
Oh.
He's a Tlingit or something. I don't know much about his background.
Mm-hmm.
And her mother was from Siberia, blue-eyed. Blonde. She was one of the prisoners' daughters that was sent from the Tsar to Russia to the coal mines or salt mines or whatever they had in those days. And of course, she came over to Alaska, I guess, with probably Shelikov or one of those old Baranov or one of those fellas. And of course, she was a school teacher. She went to college at the Western College, the State Normal in Bellingham.
Now this is your
my mother.
Your mother.
My
right.
mother.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was a teacher in a fog neck.
Uh-huh.
My dad came up on the sailing ships in the olden days, you know, they'd load tin in England and sail these big four masters all the way to Carluck and anchor them out of Carluck and use them for warehouses as they had the canned salmon, they'd load the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And when the ship was loaded about September, they'd sail all the way back to England, unload the salmon, and load it with tin to make this cans. And they'd sail all the way back to Carluck, and there were 2,000 Chinamen making cans by hand in Larsen Bay and Uyak and that part of the country. And my dad done that for 7 years. Of course, during the summer, the sailors on these sailing ships were fishermen at Karluk Spit on the beach there. I have a picture somewhere of where there was 92,000 red salmon in one beach seine. The tide went out, they were 6 feet deep, dry, you know, and they were loading them in scows and towing them across to Uyak Cannery.
Yeah.
So after about 7 years of that, he started wintering in a fog neck, like all the other Scandinavians that day. He wintered in a fog neck. He met my mother
now,
there.
What was his background? Where was he from?
Estonia.
Estonia.
Estonia,
right.
That's one of the Baltic provinces,
right.
One of the Baltic Sea, Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia.
Yeah. Now, about what year would that be that he got to a fog neck then? Any
In the 1890s.
Uh-huh.
Exact year I wouldn't know, but 1890s.
And he met your mother, who was a teacher at a fog neck.
Yes, she was a teacher in a fog neck.
Mm-hmm.
And after 7 years of their marriage, I came to this country.
Uh-huh.
And a Dr. Silverman was a doctor here in Kodiak, and he was married to the Mrs. Kraft, Otto Kraft's second wife.
Yes, Otto Kraft's second wife. Now, is that the lady who's still living in Kodiak, or Wilton White's
no,
mother?
No, that's Ben Kraft's wife.
Ben Kraft's
and
wife.
Ben Kraft was Otto Kraft's son.
Yes.
He was the oldest son of Otto Kraft.
Uh-huh. And so this fellow was probably the only doctor in Kodiak.
He was the only doctor. And of course, I had an uncle here too, my father's brother, John.
Uh-huh.
And he was the mailman between a fog neck and Kodiak. So he came over to get the doctor, you know, and they took me off the kitchen table, I guess, and put me in bed then.
But you were born on the kitchen table.
Well, that's a joke. No, I don't know where I was born. I don't remember that. And when I was 8 years old, my mother was postmistress, and she was all through teaching school, but she was a postmistress, and the post office was right in our store in a fog neck.
Right.
And she was in the middle of signing a letter to the postmaster in Kodiak here. And the postman was the mailman, who was Arthur Marzan at that time.
Mm-hmm.
He was waiting for her, and she had a massive heart attack and dropped right in the middle of writing a letter, right in the store.
How old was she, and how old were you then?
I was 8 years old, and she must have been just about 50, because she's 42 when I was born.
Right, right.
The one and only, so I was the cutest of the...
Yeah, the cutest of the bunch, yeah.
Yeah. And my uncle drowned it at a wreck right out here at Mill Bay Rocks.
This is John?
No, John Pyoman, yes. It was in February, and there were two women and another man with him. His sailing boat with a little engine in it, two-masted schooner.
What year would that have been?
That must have been 1900. He was coming here. He was supposed to be best man for Ben Kraft's wedding. And Ben Kraft was going to marry Walter Kraft's mother. Mm-hmm. Not this Mrs. Kraft,
right.
Walter Kraft's mother.
Not Edna, but the first.
She was I forget how old she was. But I was pretty young then, and it must have been about 1918. Mm-hmm. Something like that.
What happened then? It was a storm and the boat
in the
out?
Middle of the night, he was coming around. It was a storm, snow in February.
From a fog neck.
From a fog neck to Kodiak, see, and he had all these furs that were being shipped to Funston Brothers, who were the fur brokers in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And he saved all the furs. They were all up on the beach, and he was found in a swimming position, frozen to death.
Yeah.
They found the other man, but the two women were never found out here.
Oh, what a tragedy.
Yeah, one was my aunt, my wife's uncle, our aunt, and the other one was her cousin. They were coming to Kodiak. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, that's so much for that.
Now, what about your father? He had the store in a Fognak?
He had the store in a
Fognak. And raised you after your mother died?
Or? Oh, yes. Sure. In 1911, he went back to Europe. You know, these old country people, they always want to go back home where they were born, just like me. I come up here now. And that was, I was 3 years old, 1911. And he brought back my aunt, the only Pioman girl. Mm-hmm. There's three or four brothers, but only one Pioman girl. And she was a widow, about 40 years old. So she wanted to come to America. So he brought her up to a Fognak. And shortly after that, her son was Fritz Lawrenson, Rudy Lawrenson's father.
Oh, yes, I know Rudy well.
Yeah. He brought her, and Emil Norton's wife is also his daughter.
Yes.
So he brought her back to this country, and he had a fox farm in Bear Island by Port Bailey.
Yes.
And so my aunt actually brought me up when my mother died, because my dad was bachelor for years. Mm-hmm. So finally, he started corresponding with somebody that he'd met in Europe back in 1911. And the next thing I knew, she was, arrived in America. And they were married here in Kodiak, mm-hmm. and that was, well, heck, I went to school in San Francisco. I spent 5 years in San Francisco. High school and a couple of years of college, and they were married during that time. Mm-hmm. Then we built a cannery. First we had the sawmill in Raspberry Straits, Tiger Cape, you probably mm-hmm. heard of old Tiger Lou and that bunch. We built a sawmill in Raspberry Straits, and pretty soon they had a little hand cannery there in the 20s, 24, 25. Mm-hmm. I was in the States then going to school. And after 1925, we built Iron Creek Salmon Cannery, and part of the cannery we leased to a herring concern, Wakefield.
Mm-hmm. Now that's on a Fognak, all on a Fognak.
On Raspberry Island, Raspberry Straits, that's a Fognak, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then we sold. Then my dad went back to Europe for a trip in 1936, we leased to this herring company with an option, a 4-year option for them to maybe buy us out. So he went to Europe and never came back. He went for a month's trip. And then, of course, the Russians came through that country, and the Germans one day, the Russians threw it right in the middle of their war. My dad lived in Alaska, in a nice, peaceful country, one of the most peaceful countries in the world, I guess, at that time, the territory of Alaska. So he went out in the yard to pick a pear off a tree, and finally bought a house, because he was there for years. Finally bought a home there, knowing he couldn't come back. He was an American citizen, but he considered him a Russian subject. Mm-hmm. So and she was Estonian, so she was right at home. Mm-hmm. She was from Estonia. So they lived there, and he got this heart attack in 1944.
So he would have been quite elderly by that time.
No, he was only 77.
Oh, 77.
This was back in 44. Uh-huh. So I've already outlived him. I'm 84.
Yeah.
And, in the meantime, this company that had a lease on our cannery exercised their option to buy. Mm-hmm. So I sold to them. I still had the Fognak place, the store and the house and everything there. So, while I was still at Iron Creek, a year or two after they bought it, I was still around there because they wanted to know a lot of things. And And there's a bear hunter came up there with two horses, a Palomino and a brown. Mm-hmm. So when they left, they didn't want to take the horses back with them, and I bought the horses from them, shoeing out the saddles, all for $75, two horses, the saddle outfits, and the whole works.
Yeah.
One was a young horse, one was a little older horse. Well, that when winter came along, I didn't want to leave them on Raspberry Island. If I was afraid the bears might get them, or they starve to death, or something, so I was going to take them to a fog neck. Now it's 15 miles from Iron Creek to a fog neck. We have to cross from Raspberry Island to a fog neck island, and it goes dry there. And when the tide comes in from both ways, and it just raises quick. So another kid and myself decided to ride them all. We didn't have boats or skiffs to take a couple of horses, so we were going to ride them all the way into a fog neck. Which I did. We rode them to a fog neck, and on the way crossing from Raspberry Island, right about where Mike Mullen and Enola had their place and sold it for $1 million here. You know, you heard that.
I'm not familiar with it.
Raspberry, well, it's common knowledge here. Some cult bought, some Russian cult bought it.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Well, that, we crossed right there. And as we were going across quite a spell, the tide was coming in, and by the time we got three quarters of the way across, the tide was such we had to swim the rest of the way, hanging on the horse. Then we rode all the way to a fog neck in November, cold. I got tonsillitis, and it turned into a rheumatic fever. And Dr. Johnson came over on a little charter boat to take care of me. Well,
this is Dr. Bob's father.
Yeah, and here I'm in bed. I was in bed for a month, and I couldn't move. My fever is a terrible thing. So that's when I decided I had this property here in Kodiak, which we leased from the Russian church in 1919 for $10 a year. Had a 99-year lease. My dad did that. Well, anyway, I decided to come to Kodiak and build something I could rent and go back to Fog Neck, of course. See.
Okay, could I interrupt? I want to hear about Kodiak, but before that, now, could you tell me a little bit about a Fog Neck? Now, people all left there at a certain time, didn't they?
No.
That was much later?
Fog Neck was not evacuated till the tidal wave.
Tidal wave, okay.
But at one time, a fog neck had 8 more people than Kodiak.
Yes.
We had 3 stores there and a dance hall and a church. That was it. No restaurants or hotels or anything else. There was a post office, a church, a dance hall, and 3 general merchandise stores.
And your father owned one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Now, there were a lot of people, say, around, but maybe over 200, I suppose. Do you recall the number?
Yeah, there were 9 people more than in Kodiak. Uh-huh. It was in the 200s.
Okay, and this would be, the year would be about?
Well, I left there in, I would say, in the 30s.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've never been there. I've always wanted to see it. The church is still standing.
Yeah.
And
see, there was no payroll of any kind. The only payroll in Fog Neck was when the freight came, boats the anchor way out there, and they'd go out to these ships with a skiff, load the freight on, they'd come into town, and no harbor, you know, just open ocean and rough and reefs and rocks. And the only payroll was somebody building a dory for somebody, or building a house for somebody, or carrying the freight up to the stores. Mm-hmm. Nobody hired clerks or anything, need any, just one person, you know.
Yeah. And now Father Gerasim was there.
Yeah, the church.
And it was quite a beautiful church, I understand.
It was as big as the original one here.
Uh-huh.
The bigger church seemed bigger than this church now. I mean, it held more people. And he had his parish next door to it.
Were you Orthodox then?
I was christened there. Yes, my mother was Orthodox. You know, her father was this Russian priest.
Yeah. Now then, you said you were married there too.
Oh, yes.
By Father Grossum.
1933, yeah. We had a 3-day wedding, and I had a whole bunch of Kodiak came over, and then we came back over here and had another party, and that was big deals in those days.
Yeah.
Everybody in town was invited to that wedding, you know, and they had pirog and Gorka, you know what Gorka is.
Oh, yes. Just for the record, your wife's name, and do you have any children?
And my wife's name was Rika Larson.
Rika Larson.
Yeah, it was a big family. Martin Larson was the webman for Kodiak Fisheries. In the summertime, mm-hmm. in the wintertime, they went out hunting silver fox, land otter, and weasels, you know. And pangol, dug clams and codfish out in the bay. And they made about $350 the whole season. They raised a family of 8 and 9 kids on that. So they had a shotgun and a lot of ammunition and shot ducks. And there were no deer or anything at that time. Sea lions and things like that. You know, the spare ribs from seal, the livers.
Yeah. Now, did you have children then?
Yes. Uh-huh. All the people had a cow or two cattle. Everybody had their own milk. Some of them made their own butter. Mm-hmm. But everybody in Larson family was 8 or 9 children. And I was the only one. And of course, we had our first child was born when we still were operating our cannery in Iron Creek. My first child was born in Seward, Alaska. I sent her to Seward nearest doctor, had been. My second one was born here in Kodiak, and my third one was my son, the two girls, and my last one was son, who just turned 50. He was born in the first hospital built downtown here. He was the second kid born there in 1941.
And the first child born there, you said, I heard you talk about it earlier.
In Seward, Alaska.
No, the first child in the hospital here, in the Griffith Memorial Hospital, who was that?
Ronald Pioman.
Oh, your son, he was the second one born?
Second one born.
Do you recall who the first?
Farmer.
Farmer,
the
that's
kid
right.
was Farmer.
Your two daughters' names then are?
Darlene and Carla. Mm-hmm. And the son is Ronald.
So it sounds like a Fognak was a real going concern, and you owned a store there at the time?
My father built a store, or bought out the old North American company.
North American
that was a
trading company?
Trading company, and Kraft at the same time bought their branch here.
Right.
And Erskine's was the old AC, Alaska Commercial Company.
Mm-hmm.
So my dad built there, and of course we bought furs, and I have the old gold scale that we used to bought gold dust.
Sounds like your father was quite an entrepreneur.
Oh yeah, and he was involved in a lot of things. We had foxes on Marmot Island. Uh-huh. For years he leased Marmot Island and planted 12 pair of silver foxes on there and let them propagate for about 10 years before we went out to pelt. I used to go out there with the hunters, and some of the Kodiak guys used to go out hunting with
them. Everyone had to be pretty self-sufficient in those days, didn't they?
That island was, yes. Yeah. Marmots, you know, these animals and fish and ducks and stuff on the beaches. And we'd shoot a seal or some, let them drift in, and the foxes had, there was no problem. They're wild, just like they are in the wilds.
Well, let's get back to Rotary just a minute. Could you give me a brief thoughts on the guys who made up the original Rotary? Like, I'm really interested, of course, in Charlie Manson because of my wife's grandfather. But what was Charlie like, and what did he do when Rotary started?
We saw the lumber that built Charlie Manson's hotel.
Oh, the Sunbeam.
Is that the name of it?
Sunbeam Hotel, yeah.
Yeah, the very original hotel. And, well, not the original, but he was the hotel. So the old Kodiak Hotel burned down years ago. And
what year do you think that would have been?
That was in the 20s.
In the 20s, yeah.
That's been 20.
So Charlie built the hotel, and when Rotary started, he was running the hotel.
Run the hotel. That's before he started guide.
Yeah.
Their guide.
But what was he like? He had an accent. I've listened to his tapes.
He was Danish.
Danish?
He was Danish. And he had come from way up north. He had a boat called the Leicester, two-masted sailing boat.
Yeah, he had been a Nome for about 10 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He came down here from there, and he's a good friend of my father's.
Uh-huh.
And he was kind of a burly, red face mess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about Gene Dawson? What did he do?
Gene Dawson was a newspaper man.
Right. He started the Mirror?
He started the Mirror. I built the building for him to start the Mirror in, and he, as a result, I had the back page of the paper for my ad, grocery ads.
Oh.
I wish I could find one of those little papers, but they had this wash out and been sold a dozen times since then.
Yeah.
Well, then during the war, he sold to, I forget who now, and then he moved down to Seattle. And of course, I had the store here for years, and then I moved to Seattle in 42, took the family down for the duration. We figured we'd lick the Japanese next Wednesday afternoon and we'd be back. Well, 5 years later, it was still a war. In the meantime, I had managers running my stores here. But I used to go down to buy. It's hard to buy refrigerators and tires and things. They're all, you know, AAA priorities.
Yeah.
But with the base here, I had AAA priorities. So I'd stay with the family for a month. I'd come up here for 2 weeks and back down there. And pretty soon I got a 1A classification. Here I'm 37 years old with a business and three kids.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like I should go. I was offered a commission in the Navy.
Uh-huh.
Because I knew the Aleutians. I'd been out there many times. And I didn't see my way clear. They said, well, either that or get a defense job. So I went with the War Shipping Administration in Seattle.
Uh-huh.
Speaking several languages. I spoke German, Russian, and Spanish, English, a little bit of English, and a little bit of Aleut.
Uh-huh.
In the stores and the bug net, we had to talk Aleut, you know.
Oh, sure.
So I worked with them all through the war years, from 42 till the war was over.
In Seattle?
In Seattle. I'd meet the United Nations vessels out. I'd go out with the pilot boat. And they put me on board the ship coming in, Klipfontein, all the Scandinavian ships, and of course I understood that. And by the time we got into Seattle with the ship, I'd have all their orders already phoned in, everything from lifeboats, engine rags, you name it, groceries, yeah, medical supplies. And they'd transport about 7,000 soldiers on board to the South Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a lot of supplies.
Mm-hmm.
And of course they only were in town for about 3 days, and that time we had everything there to do. That was what I did all through the war years. But when the war was over, here my kids are taking tap dancing, piano lessons, and athletic clubs and stuff. I'd bring them back to the rock pile up here. There wasn't a lawnmower in town. My kids would, you know.
Yeah.
So, fine, and then I still kept shuttling, and I think in 1963, Wadlinger wanted to buy me out, and gosh, I was so settled there, I got in the real estate business, and after, you know, so I sold, and then that title, it came about a month or two after I sold.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And since the Tidal Wave, I was here just 10 years ago, 81, for a two-week visit like this. See. And I wanted to go to Afognak, but the weather and it was all the fellows that had boats were out fishing and I couldn't get a boat to go. But now I'm trying to get over, and George Magnuson,
oh,
is going to take me the first fine day. He's
having
some electric.
He's great. He's got a nice boat. And
oh, yeah,
nice
I know George real well.
Okay, well, let's see. How about, we talked about Gene. What about our... A. Holmes Johnson, he is Dr. Bob's father, and he was one of the
One of the originals, yes.
He was the only doctor at the time?
Yes. Yeah. He was the only doctor. He was a pretty good doctor.
Yeah. Oh, a lot, so he's well
saved,
respected.
Saved my neck, yeah.
Then, Larry Wadlinger, you mentioned him.
He was a druggist.
And Bill Wadlinger's drugstore, and
He didn't build it. He bought it from Frank Herman.
We talked about Ray Martin a little bit. He was.
He had the liquor store and the airline agency here.
And then was it Roy Snyder or?
Roy Snyder
had the Mecca Bar.
He built the Mecca Bar, and then he he sold it to somebody and moved to Vashon Island.
Right. Do you remember what the club was up to and what happened in the early days in Rotary? Did you have projects
not
or
too much? Not too much, because really, just a few months after we organized that, I moved.
Uh-huh.
And then we didn't amount to very much then,
no.
You know, it was just a meeting now and then that we had. And same with the Chamber of Commerce.
Uh-huh.
And that was on the first city council. Mrs. Kraft is the only one left that was on the first city council.
Is Edna Kraft was on the council?
Yeah, she was the only first council. Uh-huh. And a fellow named Chadwick was our first mayor.
Uh-huh.
And he was a salesman. He's a good friend of Krillsheimer, who was the owners of Kadiak Fisheries.
Now, I've heard that name often, Krillsheimer.
Krillsheimer, they own the Kadiak Fisheries cannery here.
You probably knew Ole Johnson. He was my father-in-law. I'm sure you knew him before.
I remember when Thelma was born.
Oh, you do? Yeah. Yeah,
and
she was
Roy,
born. She
Roy.
Was born here. Roy was born in
Kinetic
when Charlie was out there.
Yeah. Of course, Al Madsen. He was born in the old country.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Knew Al.
So let's see. Anything else we talked about Rotary, the early members and. And of course, the club is getting near its 50th year. Were you ever involved in Rotary after you left Kodiak?
No.
Did you?
I visited several times in Seattle.
Uh-huh.
I still have my old Rotary button.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The original Rotary.
Uh-huh.
I've got that in my den.
What was Kodiak like during the war years? Do you? It sounds like it was really booming. It was a small community of maybe 500 before they started building the base, and then it really sort of like boomed after that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I don't remember the population, but when the war broke out right at Pearl Harbor, you know, we Black Ops. Everybody
right.
had built little sheds in front of their front door, you know, so you couldn't have any light or shades on all our windows.
Yeah.
You couldn't smoke a cigarette on the street.
Were there like wardens or guards or people who walk around?
Yeah,
telling
the MPs
the
were in town from the base, the MPs, yeah,
mm-hmm.
And every day about 4 o'clock they'd bring in thousands of soldiers and sailors from the base, you
mm-hmm.
know, and they hit the bars, and about 2 o'clock in the morning they'd load them like cordwood on the big trucks that come in to get them all.
They were like all passed out?
They were sitting all over town, you know, and
now it must have really, your business really boomed, I'm sure.
Oh,
with,
yeah, I had two cars, two delivery trucks, one for town and one for the base. I had a man running steadily
really?
To the base. He'd go out there and take their orders.
Now this was groceries as well as?
Oh, yes, groceries mostly.
Uh-huh.
And of course I supplied the base with Ford parts. So they'd come out and clean me out. They had priority, boy. I couldn't refuse them, you know.
Yeah.
They'd come in and want all the tires I had and all the car batteries and ship them out to Dutch Harbor. There was no other Ford dealer in the vicinity, and I couldn't say, I just hated to have them come in.
Yeah.
Then you waited 6 months for your money with a 10% markup.
Right, right. So you were the first Ford dealer?
That's right.
In Kodiak.
I sold 41 taxi cabs in 1941 here Can you imagine? 41. Everybody and his brother had a taxi cab.
Yeah.
So the first fire engines, the first buses, all Fords. There were no other agencies here.
So there was no Chevrolet or Chrysler at that time. You were it. You were the only agent. Correct. Did you have then a repair shop too? And
somebody had a shop up here in the valley.
Uh huh.
I forget who it was.
Now from that, then you expanded into refrigerators. You were saying.
Oh yes,
appliances.
Firestone tires and Pennsylvania vacuum cup tires. They had little buttons like on a octopus. You lift it. Hold the road, they don't make them anymore. But oh yeah, Firestone, they'd last about 2,000 miles here. Crushed rock all the way to the base is only 3 miles of one-way dirt road.
Yeah.
I've got a plaque at home where I sold more cars on the shortest one-way road in the nation. Ford Motor Company.
Now, of course, at the time, everything came by Alaska
boat.
Steam.
Oh, yeah. Alaska Steam started the old Curacao and the Denali and those old boats.
Yeah.
Then we sold those ships to the Japs, sent the scrap there,
and then
they shot it all back at us.
What about the road now? When you were first here, there probably wasn't much road out towards
all
the base.
All dirt roads and crooked, you know.
Yeah. And then the whole Chiniac Highway, that must have been built.
That was built during the war.
During the war.
We could only go as far as the potato patch here. They call it where the beachcombers is now.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's as far as you could go. There wasn't many people living past that. Dr. Johnson had a spot out there.
Right.
I think they still have them.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Johnson.
Mm-hmm. So the town really was booming during the war, and there was a lot of activity.
Oh, you bet.
Were you on the city council then?
We incorporated the city in 1940. I was on the first council.
Uh-huh.
I appointed the first chief of police, the first fire chief.
Yeah. Do you recall who that was?
Charlie Cook was our first chief of police.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I drove the volunteer fire truck. Badge number 7.
Yeah, wow.
And the siren was on top of my roof. Boy, that thing just vibrated the whole building when the siren went off and there was a fire.
Yeah.
We didn't have many fires, but we did have a few. And when the fire, all we had was water that was in this hand-drawn truck to start with, and then we got a fire engine fire.
Yeah.
But when there was a fire, they burnt to the ground. We couldn't stop.
Yeah.
Especially in the winter.
It must be a surprise or a shock to see the changes that have occurred in Kodiak.
I came back here in 81.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe it. It wasn't like my Kodiak anymore. And now, in the last 10 years, I drive out there. I drove all over here already, you know.
Uh-huh.
Emil Norton took me out all over and out to clear out to the end of Maknashka Bay. Beautiful homes, three-story homes.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And I was way out to Mill Bay, or not Mill Bay, but Chiniac, the other day, as far as Norton's Bakery.
Yeah.
A lot of nice homes built along there, and of course, Bill's Flats was nothing but a big swamp.
Yeah, a lot of people live out there. About 15,000, I think, on the road system.
Bell was out there living. He was the original guy. He had a couple cows or something out there.
Bell's Flats. Yeah.
And he and Ben Kraft.
He had a dairy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Ben Kraft and him used to go to the World Series games together. They were, you know, baseball fans pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bell.
Did he supply the base then with the dairy products?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
I've got a picture of my old grocery store here. Kodiak Cash Market was the name of it.
And that was 1937 when you built that?
I built that. And Mrs. Kraft's cow, Pansy, that was the name of the cow, would be standing right in front of the store in a calf sucking. So I always advertised that fresh milk. Boy, we just pushed a calf off and delivered it right. Yeah, I used to get a kick out of it.
Yeah.
But as far as rotary, you see, I don't remember what we got involved in or what we did, because only just a few months that I was in the
right.
when we before I left.
Right.
But every time I tell you what I did see at one of the rotary meetings, they had a movie pictures that were taken through a Japanese periscope that was in Woman's Bay, taking a picture of the women and children being loaded on these evacuation ships.
Really?
Yeah. I saw that here in a movie at the Rotary Club in the 50s when I was here, one of my shuttle trips. We went on one of those boats there just about that time. We went on the convoys out in the Pacific here and back and forth, and we had Canadian corvettes with us, and the Coast Guard or Navy escorting the ship. We had three or four Alaska steamships going down, the big ones, you know, the Aleutian and the Alaska and all those big ships.
It must have been frightening to think that the Japanese had attacked Dutch Harbor, and they certainly could have attacked Kodiak.
Oh, right? Yeah, they. I understand they flew around here, but they figured, oh, well, heck, there's just women and children in a little village. But we were afraid it hit the base.
Right.
And we were so close, they could mistake the town for the base. But I guess they never did. But they were out here.
Ole Johnson told me a fake city they built out at Middle Bay. Do you recall that?
Yeah, I heard about that.
The idea was that the Japanese would mistake that for Kodiak,
right,
and
that's
bomb,
right,
that, and
yeah,
there's nothing there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So lots of people, lots of soldiers and sailors and Marines, and the city just...
They had a red line up there on the hill above Craft Store up on the highway.
Uh-huh.
When the highway was coming into town. And they had three or four whorehouses, pardon the expression, but that's what
No, that's... Ole was telling me about
and
that.
And on one... On both ends, there's a prophylactic station. When he came out of there, why... and you'd see a row of white hats, sailors. You know, these ships were going around the Coral Sea and around Dutch Harbor, and they'd stop at Kodiak here. And Army, Navy, and Marines. Yeah, that was a busy place.
Just people lined up outside. Huh?
Yeah, lined up. They had big waiting rooms like you have in the bus station. $5 bill in their hand, they'd move over, your next. Give you 2 minutes to do your business.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you a little story, so don't put that on tape.
Okay.
And I had this hardware store, I had these oil stoves. And one of the madams out there, she was a good customer in the grocery store all the time, and they had 8 or 9 girls up there in her place alone. So she decided to change her. She had some old oil stoves that were pretty well shot, so she wanted new oil stoves.
Mm-hmm.
So she bought 3 stoves from me, and they were the new models. So we delivered the stoves up there, and she had somebody off the street install them, like the old ones were. About 2 weeks later, she comes busting into the store. Those darn stoves aren't any good. They're all carboned up, and they just don't heat right anymore. I'm sorry I bought them and all that. So I said, well, I'll send a plumber and a man that does good installing. See, they had water coils and everything for hot water in
there, right,
to check them out. So I went with him. It was one of the plumbers in town here. I went there with him, and as soon as we looked at him, she'd never connected the fans. There was a little fan there for the draft, you know. And we fixed them. I mean, the plumber did, and I came back home, and about a week later she comes in the store, and I says, well, her name was Sally or something. I says, how are your stoves working now? Oh, she says, they're working fine. Gee, they're just great. And I said, well, you know, when you want something done like that, you get a plumber to do your plumbing, and you get a carpenter to, you don't pick somebody off the street to She says, "Well, Carl, if you ever want anything in our line, don't go down the street. Come up to our professionals." The store was full of people. Everybody's, ha, ha, ha. I had to stick my tail between my legs and crawl away.
That was funny.
Yeah.
Do you know of any Root?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's back. I just ran and just had a, he stopped by our house and we talked to him. He's back in town. He just got back a few days ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I know him, but I met him again, but the name...
Yeah, he was a plumber here for a
while. Yeah,
he
was.
Well, there's
and the fellow that was a plumber, the one who was Stye, maybe you heard of him, he was married to Olga Stye. She was a local Kodiak girl then.
Now, do you have family here still, relatives, no, or...?
My wife has a second guy, this Laura Olson at Anton Bay.
Yes.
Anton
Larson Bay.
Anton Larson Bay. Okay. She is a cousin to my wife. Her father and Rika's father were brothers,
mm-hmm.
Anton and Martin Larson.
Mm-hmm.
And we are staying with Myrtle.
Myrtle, yes.
Yeah, she's got an apartment in the Keshavara Villa building.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been going to the island and staying there, so she, of course, she comes to Seattle, she's at our place. So
she said,
you just take the apartment, I'm out there all the time.
Yeah.
So that's where we're at.
Who were some of the old-timers you might remember, like in the Frontenac, did you know the Von Scheeleys?
Oh, yeah, real well, gosh, yes.
Now, who
I went
that?
To see Eunice yesterday.
Eunice, yeah.
Oh, she's a... I went to school with her.
Yes, that was.
Kids together.
In the Frontenac.
Tom Scheele and her.
Yeah.
And Robert and Teddy Scheele, and there was a bunch of Scheele kids.
Oh, yes, yeah.
But I guess Eunice and Enola from... Pat Mullins, our Mike Mullins' wife, and there we all went to school together. And she is the only one left that I went to school with. All dead, all of them.
Is that right?
Most of the kids that I went to school with in Rudy Sundberg, Fred Sundberg, Johnny Patel, all gone.
Now you had a school in the Frontenac that went through high school or?
No, eighth grade was it. That's right when I graduated from eighth grade. That's when I went to California.
And was there one teacher?
Three teachers.
Three teachers for
yeah,
all
we
the
had
kids.
The chart class, they called it, you know.
So, they had what?
What they called the chart class.
Chart
that was
class.
The, what do they call them now? Oh, the, when you first go to school the first year or so, you did a chart, everything, they had charts, they pulled down like window shades,
oh, yeah,
A,
yeah.
B, C, and
oh, yeah.
Stuff. They called that chart class, and then they had up to the eighth grade,
uh-huh.
But they taught, we had a teacher that taught Spanish.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Parrish, he was the principal.
Uh-huh.
He even taught Spanish on the side.
Now, was there, I keep hearing about... Frontenac having two you need to go. I don't mean to keep
yeah,
you here.
Well, I get it a little.
Okay, just there being two parts of a Frontenac, there was an old native village.
Three parts of a Frontenac.
Uh-huh.
It was Di Rivonia. You've read that
yes.
on that
yes.
book. That was where the Creole town. They
mm-hmm.
called them Creoles. There's half Italians and Russian mixed.
Right.
And then there was a center part of town, which was the white men, they call them,
mm-hmm.
Scandinavians and that. And
lots of Scandinavians.
Oh, yeah, and then Aleutam. That was past the graveyards out towards Letnik Bay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was scattered just along the beach. There was no double homes. Everybody had a beach right along the beach,
right.
All the way along the beach. Bigger than Kodiak because it was longer to go,
yeah.
And the only harbor was Back Bay. We had to walk there to tie our boats up
mm-hmm.
because southwest wind was offshore, but easterly or northerly or mm-hmm. northeast, oh boy, we had breakers as big as Hawaii coming in.
Do you remember the ice manufacturing at Woody Island, was before, I guess. I'm not sure the dates on that, but there wasn't anything going on like that.
No, but I remember old Jack Blinn's, Jess Blinn's father. Blinn had an ice house here. They'd go out to the lake here and saw the ice in big blocks and put them in sawdust. It would keep, you know, practically all summer.
Instead of refrigeration.
Instead of refrigeration, they had ice houses.
Yeah.
You had a little ice box at home that you bought a little ice from.
Yeah.
And I make his Tom and Jerry's and stuff. He had a saloon here, you know, the dance hall. I used to play accordion at their dance hall here in the late 30s and 40s,
yeah.
You know. Johnny Hubley and Noble, he was a bookkeeper for Erskine. He used to play the piano.
Uh-huh.
And when the Andersons, Blue-Eyed Bill, they called him, you heard of the expression, Blue-Eyed Bill, there's a Brown-Eyed Bill. But Bill, he played the saxophone such as the best he could, anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we used to have our Hambo Shottages, and Madsen used to dance there, and even Alf Madsen, and Magnuson was always won the prize, Mr. and Mrs. Magnuson. George's dad.
Yes, I read about him. He used to run boats up
the Oh, the Minnie B, yeah. He was the first, he brought the Minnie B up from Seattle, and he ran the Minnie B for Kodiak Fisheries here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, I knew both Pete Magnuson and then Charlie, or, what the heck was his first name? I knew George's father.
Yeah. So when you started in business here with your grocery store, your main competition was Kraft's and also Erskine's?
Oh, yes. Watkinson was the bookkeeper down there, you know, and he'd come down and want me to, he wanted to help me price my merchandise, my groceries. I said, I know how to price merchandise. I had a lower price because I didn't have all the employees and all that, so I had... serve yourself and cut price. I had a certain percentage I charged, whereas they'd take a piece of merchandise and say, I wonder how much I can get for this.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
Well, Charlie had a store here for a short time when he first came in after World War One, about 1920 or something like that.
Yeah, I don't
very
remember.
Short time, and then he went into the hotel business.
I don't remember that.
Well, I really enjoy your talking to me. I really appreciate you taking this time.
Well,
we're going to probably do a little booklet on the the Rotary 50 years, and let's see, anything else? I think we probably covered everything, haven't we?
Yeah, we had a Chamber of Commerce here too. We started that.
Uh-huh.
I still have my old card on that.
What year would that be?
About the same time.
About the same time?
Yeah.
That was really the watershed.
Once we incorporated the city, then things started, really. You know, we bought the first electric plant in old Fairbanks Morris diesel, one lunger. You could hear it all over time. Boom, 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 boom. You know, you couldn't use electric ranges. They're just more or less lights.
Yeah,
that's all. Uh-huh. And then it was DC, current, you know, not AC. Uh-huh. And certain appliances you couldn't use, and then lights would blink and overloaded. And then they went into these Caterpillar engines.
Well, 1937, when you opened your store, up until. It must have been a big difference between 1937 and then the war years.
Oh, yeah.
You said there were cows in the streets.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And many cars there?
We knew everybody's cat and dog in town,
you know.
Oh, yeah, there were no restrictions of any kind. You'd have to shovel the crap off the front porch and the cows walking through.
Wooden sidewalks then, or?
Some places had sidewalks and some didn't.
Yeah. Most people were Orthodox?
Yeah. And about 1940, the first church was a Baptist church up here.
Oh, the big one downtown? Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the first other churches that was built. Yeah.
Well,
I bought all the copper and the nails, bolts, screws, hinges for this church after the old one burnt, you know, those onions on top of the church.
Oh, yes, the first...
All that copper I furnished from... I started a priest, he was quite a bum, you know, the priest at that time was a little guy, and he'd come in the store, we need this, you know, I says, well, whatever you need, I see, at least from the church for only $10 a year.
Oh, yes.
So I thought, gee, at least I can do, I could have easily paid $150 a month or whatever, $10 a year. So I gave him whatever I could, and I ordered all the copper and gave him.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's great. Well.